Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's Jack Perry again here in Midtown Atlanta with Legacy Leader Radio. I just want to remind you all the reason why I do Legacy Leader Radio is to bring people to the forefront that make changes, positive changes, not only in our community in here in Atlanta, but around the world as well. With that said, I have three very wonderful, outstanding professional ladies in the audience today. I have Cheryl DeLuca Johnson, I have Teresa Wash, and I have Kathy Bergeron in the studio. The subject for today and the topic of today is going to be something that's very sensitive. It may hit a couple of triggers with some folks out there. It may be something that needs to be brought to the forefront, and something that is very personal and very close to me, not only professionally but also personally as well. And that is the domestic violence. Domestic violence, in my opinion, has become an epidemic in our community, based upon anger and people getting hurt unnecessarily. Domestic violence is one of those quiet issues and concerns that some churches, some organizations, professionally and personally, organizations will not touch, won't even get involved with, out of fear of reprisal, out of fear of, well, that's too much of a touchy subject, and we don't want to go there. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, it's a problem, it's an issue, it's a concern, and we're going to talk about it today. So please strap yourselves in, enjoy the show, get something out of it, and I promise you at the end of the show, it will change your life. And I also promise you at the end of the show that we'll provide you a 1-800 number that if you need help, want help, we'll provide the number to you so we can get you into a safe place. So ladies, welcome.
Great. It's great to be here. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for having us.
If we can just go around the room real quick, just identify who you are to our listeners and what organization you belong to and what you do. And Kathy.
All right. Great. My name is Kathy Bergeron. I am the executive director of the Real Life Center. We're located in Fayette County, Georgia.
I'm Cheryl DeLuca Johnson. I'm the CEO and president of Street Grace, an organization. It's a faith-based organization that's battling domestic minor sex trafficking.
Okay. Hi, I'm Teresa Wash, and I'm the executive director of Community Welcome House, which is a domestic violence shelter in Coweta County.
Okay, great. Teresa, we got Fayette County, Coweta County, and the whole city of Atlanta represented today, and we'll touch the world. I put out quite a broadcast yesterday from East Coast, West Coast, North and South. So we have quite a few listeners on the radio today. I'd like to put it out there, and anybody just jump in, is I'd like to know how bad is the domestic violence issue in our community today? Any stats?
I have some.
Go ahead.
I have
Teresa.
Some stats that are worldwide in U.S. Mm-hmm. Every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. Around the world, at least one in every three women have been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused during their lifetime. Most often, their abuser is someone that they know. Mm-hmm. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury in women, more than car accidents, muggings, or robberies combined. Studies show that 10 million children witness some form of mm-hmm. domestic violence in their lifetime. And nearly one in five teenage girls have been beaten in a relationship by a boyfriend during their dating time.
Dating time. Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that is really unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Every day in the U.S., more than three women are murdered by their husbands or boyfriends.
Mm. Wow. Can I just ask real quick for our listeners the source of your...
This came from Domestic Violence Statistics 2014.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's a carryover from previous year's statistics, but it is called Domestic Violence Statistics 2014.
Okay. Any ahas? I got every one of those was an aha to me, and it was very surprising. The number that had 10 million, what was it, 10 million again?
Please? 10 million children witnessed some form of domestic violence in their lifetime.
On that 10 million, does it mention anything about what they see in the home between husband and wife?
It does not, but just from working with some of the women that at our shelter,
yeah.
it is every it is everything from verbal to physical abuse.
Okay.
Throwing chairs, hitting, pushing,
mm-hmm.
Emotional abuse as well.
Okay, so I'm going to put it out to the to all three of you. What classifies or defines domestic violence?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and let Teresa answer that as she runs a shelter. But what I'd like to do is just kind of add a little bit to some of those statistics and just to kind of start the conversation off. I've recently read, and I don't have the source of those statistics with me, but just to add to that is I think sometimes we have the idea that domestic violence is limited to maybe our poorer section of our communities. Mm-hmm. And so often I think that number is a little bit misrepresented because I've heard of domestic violence among those that are a little bit more affluent as the silent the silent epidemic, because it's reported a little bit differently. Those that are struggling in an abusive situation that have financial means often don't call the police, but what they do is if they're going to deal with it, if they finally decide to report it, they'll go to an attorney. And so those numbers aren't often reflected because they don't call the police because they have a lot different repercussions. And when there's money involved, they also know that their chances of maybe dealing in the court system is going to be much greater, and they may lose their kids, or they're going to there's just a lot of different dynamics that are involved when there's financial implications.
Yeah, and I'm going to go ahead and add that because prior to my work with Street Grace, I worked in a residential treatment center for severely addicted women.
Mm-hmm.
And they tended to be a middle-class group of women.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
a lot of those never got reported,
mm-hmm.
but they found other ways of coping, which, of course, were detrimental to them and their children.
Right.
And then their worst fears would come true because the abuse would continue. And because of their addiction, they would lose their children and their home and everything else. So I think that the numbers that are actually reported, I would agree, are very small.
And they are. They are. Many times, even as a woman would come in as a crisis, they will leave within 28 to 48 hours back to their abuser as well. I think that there are many women who are financially unable. When they leave, they normally leave with nothing. And
mm-hmm.
that is
mm-hmm.
on any demographic, any level, whether they're affluent or whether they are not, they leave with absolutely nothing but their children.
And so when you say, so what I'm hearing in this conversation is that if a person cannot afford, or whatever the statistic is and whatever we define as being not affluent, they're most likely going to show up at a shelter or give you a call. Or they're going to not have the financial means to call an attorney, where it's all handled sort of behind closed doors, very quietly and out of the public eye. Is that my understanding? Is that okay? So the statistics can be skewed, but yet the damage can still be the same regardless if you have money or don't have money.
Right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, I have read that statistically what we have reported definitely shows the lower the income, you're much more likely to experience domestic violence. I think the numbers that I've read is it's almost 7 times more likely if you are lower income to experience domestic violence. That's what's reported.
Yes,
what I'm trying to say is sometimes that number is skewed or what I think it is skewed because
mm-hmm.
it's the more affluent don't report it in the same way. They don't call the police because what they'll do is the repercussions are much greater. They'll go to an attorney and they'll plan it out or they may not leave. It's like what Cheryl was saying. She dealt with addictions because they'll try coping with it in another way. I think another thing that it's important to understand is it's also, there's so many different reasons why people don't report. And another statistic that is out there is for the women that are in our churches. The statistic is out there that it's 1 in every 4 women that are sitting in our church pews across the United States are are in or have been in an abusive relationship. And that's the number that's really staggering to me. And I think part of that is because they just don't know what to do.
I find that that statistic interesting in a couple of ways. One is that that corresponds directly to the number of children who are sexually abused. That's they say right. 1 in 4 female children will be sexually abused before the age of 18 in mm-hmm. some way. Mm-hmm. So that correlative statistic I find very interesting. The other thing is, you know, and as I said, our organization Street Grace works against domestic minor sex trafficking, where we're trying to change societal thinking. I think domestic violence has a head start on that, but I still think there's a huge amount of shame which keeps women from reporting, no matter what their socioeconomic strata, in this particular area.
And I think, from what you said, Cheryl, I think in the same manner that when you're thinking about sex trafficking, you're thinking of certain parts of the cities, other countries. In the same way, domestic mm-hmm. violence, you're not thinking that it's going to happen in my neighborhood, in my church. And I don't think that has changed at all. I think that there is an awareness of domestic violence, but it is specific to demographics, specific to locations. Very few, as Kathy pointed out, I think very few folks within their own church would sit down next to a woman who is probably being involved in domestic violence.
Okay. Reporting. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it's fear of looking different, being different, and somebody else in your business being put out in the street, and you don't want to say anything or do anything about it. So some women and men will live their life in quiet desperation because they don't want to announce to the world that they're not perfect and got a problem. Am I on track? Comments?
You are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think there's a lack of understanding to really what mm-hmm. abuse is. You had mentioned earlier, you had the question of, you know, what constitutes abuse. And, you know, I don't consider myself any kind of expert, but and we don't run a shelter. We do a lot of proactive care and preventive care for our families. But, most of us, I think, have a connotation when we think of domestic violence. We think of physical abuse, but there's physical abuse, there is sexual abuse, there's the emotional, verbal, and psychological abuse, which is often considered one category, and there's also spiritual abuse, where someone is, that's actually a category. So there's really four areas, and I think because there's a lack of understanding, some people may actually be in an abusive situation, understand that things aren't right, but just don't know how to describe it and don't know what to do. And so they stay in their situation desperate. Almost, there may be fear, but they almost mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on and I'm afraid to tell anybody. And not only am I ashamed of it, I don't understand it. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lack of understanding is also another reason it doesn't get reported.
There's not a list out there that says, okay, if you have been hit, you know, there's not a checklist that says this. And I think that is a huge factor. We deal with it with trafficking, too, is even the victims. We, and from the outside, can look at what the situation is and see them as victims. Mm-hmm. But those that are in it do not. And they may, some of this may come from a family history of, well, you know what? Well, my mother went through this, and she never claimed she wasn't abused.
Sometimes when you're inside the frame, it's hard to see the picture. Okay, and I also would like to say my comment on that would be that unless somebody else tells me what it is, I sometimes just may not know that I'm in an abusive relationship or I am being abused. And I can tell you, from my own personal experience and from my own life and also from other clients, is that it's when you start seeing somebody that's abusive and you start seeing what the rest of the world is saying, what's not right, what's not wrong, and then all of a sudden you have an aha, conscious moment. You go, that's not right. Something is happening here, and it's not right. And then you have to start asking yourself, what is it? Who am I? What's important to me? What is my moral and ethical compass? And why is this person treating me this way? Do I want to stay here? And people know. And when I work with clients and I talk with people, I look at their facial expressions And when you ask them those questions, are you being abused? And you look at them, and they will have a tendency to shy away, or they'll look away because they don't want to look at you because you just hit a trigger. And that's when we got to get the person some help, and they've got to want to get help. Also, from a male perspective, not all abuse is female, and some it's going to be abuse placed upon a male as well. But oh my gosh, you can't say that, Jack. That's not manly. Well, let me tell you something. Men can be abused as well, and they can. And so they also have the right to stand up and say, "No, I don't get out of the relationship," and walk away as well. What are the stats like in Coweta or in Fayette County right now? Do we know, or how busy are you with domestic violence?
We have a small shelter, and our shelter is full almost all the time. We have 10 rooms where we house transitional, and that is women who are going to go through our program.
Okay.
And that can be up to a month to a year and a half, depending upon where they come in. Some of them come in with jobs. Most of them come in without jobs. Mm-hmm. We also have two crisis rooms where we bring women in, and then immediately because there's danger, and then we evaluate their needs and see if they're part of our program, or we find other places for them to be.
You just mentioned program. How long is the program?
The program is depending upon the woman, depending upon how how self-sustaining they are, what their how their self-esteem, how can they move forward. That's the one thing. We don't want to put a specific time frame, and we don't want a program that doesn't fit. I mean, it's just a program that is across the board. We want to fit their needs as they come in.
Great.
So again, it can be anywhere from 3 months to a year and a half. We've not had anyone with over a year that have stayed more than a year and a half.
Okay. Any success stories?
We've had several success stories.
Giving names, can you give some examples?
I have been within the community for a short time, but even within that, I have seen women who have come in broken, who are now going through a counseling.
When you say broken, talk to me about broken.
Broken.
Spiritually, mentally, physically,
probably all of the above. Mm-hmm. I mean, when someone comes in who has been involved in domestic violence, and this is just from what I have seen, this is not clinical at all, but you come in with feeling very bad about yourself. You're very embarrassed about what has happened to you. And you don't have any, you don't know where you can turn.
Yeah.
It is so beneficial that we have a crisis center, we have a shelter in our community. And I think most communities do, and that's wonderful. They're not large enough. And we try to provide, once our women come in, first of all, a safe place. That's probably the foremost thing that we do, is try to provide a safe place. There are safety things put into place so that the abuser cannot find the location. We work very hand in hand with the local police department. In fact, our police actually go by our house every hour on the hour just to make sure we're okay.
Go ahead. No, I know you're going to say, but sometimes you hit triggers with me, and I want to speak out. Domestic violence laws. Would anybody like to talk about the Georgia domestic violence laws and how they, what they look like, or Georgia? Anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and I am not a legal expert or anything like that, but I can speak to a couple of places around
it. Just examples. Yeah.
So one of the things with domestic violence laws is anybody can report domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody can report domestic violence. And I'm going to go back a few years, as I said, I'm not sure that these laws are still in place. But one of the things that frustrated me when I used to work with these women is that, unlike child abuse, where there are mandated reporters and you can go forward without the child doing anything, that unless the woman pressed charges,
And that's,
I think that's still the same, that unless she presses charges, that nothing will happen. And so these women, you know, they'll report it in this terrible time, and then they'll go through that cycle that they do. You know, there's the abuse, then the honeymoon stage, and then the building tension. And so they'll report it. They'll back off during that honeymoon stage. I promise, I'm so sorry. I won't do this again. Look, just don't, you know, do you really, how am I going to earn money while I'm in jail?
I'm sorry I hurt you last night, but I won't do it again, and I'll stop drinking.
Yes.
Until the next time.
Until Tuesday.
Yeah, until Tuesday.
But in that kind of thing. So that's one of the laws that I think, you know, was one of a big frustration for me as a therapist who worked with these women.
Yeah.
One of the other laws that I think is a newer law that is still in place also is that now it is considered child abuse if a child witnesses domestic violence. And I think that's very protective for the children now. A problem I see with that, or saw with that at the time, is that if the husband hit the wife, and the children witnessed it, or the wife, as you said, a wife could hit a husband, whoever did it, the perpetrator of that abuse and the victim of that abuse are both charged with child abuse.
I didn't know that. I think that's great. I think that's great.
Well, and I think tell me why you think that's great.
I think it's great because they're hurting the child, and the child's not directly involved, but the child witnesses it, and that can maim the child for the rest of their life.
And it can.
And you are abusing and screwing up that kid's life. And I have personally seen that happen. I've had it happen to me, and I've also seen it happen to people in my community who I'm very close with. And, you know, without giving too much information. And so I know what that does to a child.
So but you're okay with the mom and the dad both being arrested for child abuse?
Am I personally? Yes. Yes, I am.
I think you should need to explain that a little bit more. I know this is your show, Jack, but I think you need to explain that a little bit more. Because I think it's not something people generally think. And from being in that situation, I think whatever you give is going to be valuable.
Okay. If you are two adults that verbally, physically, mentally, or abuse each other, and a child sees that or witnesses that, you are having an impact on that child's mind. You're having an impact on that child's future, whether you see it or understand it or not. All kids see everything. I don't care what age they are. They're like mental sponges, and they see and hear everything. I can remember things all the way back to when I was 8 years of age, probably a little bit younger, and what I witnessed and what I saw. I know of a couple of clients, and let's leave it at that, that could recall seeing what their parents did as they grew up in their life. And it has an impact on that child, because that child will think that behavior, how my dad treated my mother, is normal. And it's not normal, because that same behavior can be carried over into your adult life, and you'll think that it's okay to abuse a woman. And you may think that it's okay to slap somebody around. It's okay for me to use my hands when I'm in a confrontation with somebody, not just certainly my spouse, but it could be a coworker. It could be somebody else, because I learned at a very early age, two people who are supposed to be my mentors, my mom and dad, have taught me it's okay for me to be verbally abusive and physically abusive to other people. And that's where we start having an epidemic. That's where the cycle continues and continues and continues. And when you talk to the child and you ask them, where did you first learn that? And you just let the child, just let them think about it, and you get a quiet moment with the child. Well, I remember seeing my dad do that to my mother. Bingo. It's not something you read about in a book. It's not something that you necessarily get implanted with when you are born. It could be something that you could see and witness as a small child. And in your brain, you think that logic memory is okay for me to put my hands on my mother and treat her abusively and talk ill of her and talk hurtful of her. And then you think that's normal, and you will carry it over in other relationships. Okay, so let me go one step further, ladies. So as I...
All right, Jack, let's hear it.
Yeah, so I'm on a roll, damn it. Okay, so... and what will happen is that you meet a very nice young lady, and you say all the things and do all the right things with this young lady, and you get to know each other, and all of a sudden you develop a relationship, and the tough times come, and all of a sudden your back's against the wall, your true character comes out, and then you realize that the young lady may realize that when her back's against the wall and this guy is going to come after her, he's going to hit her because he believes, because of past behavior, it's okay to do that, think it's normal. Well, gentlemen, let me tell you something. It's not, and that's a coward. Okay. All right. I'm done.
Can I chime in for a second?
Go ahead, Krista.
Krista, your producer here. I didn't get an introduction this
time. Oh, I'm so sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I will pay for that at the end of the show. Yeah. Trust me. Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, awareness seems like a really important thing. So as you were saying, Kathy, you're sitting in church, one out of four women. How do you become aware of that? You know, what are the signs to look for? And, you know, if I'm in that situation, what do I look for if I'm a little confused on mm-hmm. the definition of abuse? Mm-hmm. So how are we creating that awareness, and what are we doing to put that out there?
Besides have shows like this.
Yeah. Yes. Well, which is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely it is. I think just the very fact that we can have an open conversation, you know, Cheryl, I know you do a lot with sexual trafficking. Years ago, we wouldn't even have spoke of sexual trafficking. I think part of it is providing a safe environment for us to be able to speak openly. And particularly in our churches, abuse is something that just is not something we talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's been many times over the years that I've often heard people say, oh, you know, the word abuse, it's a little bit overused, or we just, you know, we don't really know what that means. And so I think what happens is because there's a lot of misunderstanding about it. So when it is discussed, people don't know what it is. It's just like when I mentioned the word spiritual abuse as a category, you all looked at me like, huh? Because people don't know. And so I think the more that we can educate ourselves, the more that we can provide the opportunities to talk about it, to talk to women, to make people understand that it's not something they have to be ashamed about. There are so many great books. There's TED Talks on it. There's mm-hmm. Wonderful blogs online. I mean, there's so many opportunities to educate yourselves you can, so that it becomes a talking point that is a safe place. So whether it's our pastors of our church or a next door neighbor, it's that you will listen to someone and not judge them, number mm-hmm. one, and then educate yourself. And, you know, one of the things that, as I was thinking about coming here today, and what I've learned over the years when I work with women, is one of the best things that I can do for a woman that comes into our center is love them where they're at. Because so many times those women aren't at a place where they want to go to a shelter. They may not even want to leave the relationship. And leaving is maybe or maybe not the right thing to do based on their circumstances. So the best thing I can do is love them where they're at, listen to them, and be a safe place, and help them get to the place where they understand and they're willing to face their circumstances in the eye mm-hmm. and educate themselves, and then make the best decision that they can that's right for them. But sometimes they just need a support to be able to do that. But in any circumstance, if I'm making a decision for them or telling them what to do, it's never going to work.
Right.
It has to be something for them.
Okay. And I would say it has to come from them uh-huh. on the inside out. So that would lead me to this, is how do you develop the, based on what Krista said, how do you take a woman or a man and you look at them in the eye and you help them and give them tools to develop their own self-awareness, to help them with their own self-worth, and let them know that they are somebody beautiful and wonderful mm-hmm. and they can develop and they can define their own destiny and then make their own positive choices. How do you do that? How do we do that?
I think one of the...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. I think one of the first things, because Kathy, you bring up churches, I think one of the first things to do is to talk about it in just a normal tone. Say, this exists, it mm-hmm. happens, this is what it is, this is what it looks like. And I think the leadership in some places has to start doing that. Because if you are a victim, sometimes you don't want to be looked at as a victim.
Yeah.
You basically, you need to just say, okay, so this is going on with you. Well, how are you doing? I mean, mm-hmm. I think the more we normalize, not to normalize the behavior as not make it right, not in that way normalize, mm-hmm. but normalize the conversation.
Okay.
Make it more of a frequent, not an out-of-context conversation. We can talk about hungry children a lot. We're all mm-hmm. comfortable talking about
that's
hungry
right.
children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can talk about it a lot. It's not a good thing. That's not what makes us comfortable with it. What makes us comfortable with it is we have talked about it. We understand that it exists. I think when this topic comes up, sometimes the first reaction for a lot of churches and things is to go, well, it doesn't happen here.
Right.
Well, we know statistically that's not true.
That's not true.
So mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's part of it, is to keep talking about it, make it a normal part of conversation so that we can have real conversations on how to change it.
Right. And when I take some time to visit within my community, churches and organizations, one thing that I bring awareness to is, of course, that we have a domestic violence shelter, and there and everyone that I've spoken to is more than willing to help. But what we need to move forward on, and what I really appreciate, is when someone takes the time to say, you know, where can we help you in awareness? You know, can you come and talk to our mm-hmm. Our mm-hmm. women's group or our men's group? And once that starts happening within a community, then it's not as frightening for a woman who may not want to step forward because they feel that they will be looked at differently.
Well, now, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Now, I'm the keeper of my castle at home, and I'll be doggone if you're going to come into my organization and tell me how screwed up my men are, and that because we don't have a problem here. I've witnessed that. Mm-hmm. I've actually, I'll tell you, I do this to Kathy Kathy and I have talked quite a bit. I've actually lost a good friend of mine in the last few months. I don't mean physically, but he won't have any contact with me because I told this gentleman one day, I said, angry men cause a lot of problems. And anger, even if it's at right. home, domestic violence. So if you have a domestic violence situation going on, and then you go to work, that same mindset, same mentality can be carried over in the workplace as well, and the people you're going to interact with. And a lot of people don't want to deal with that. They said, nobody's going to want you to come into their workplace and tell you how angry their employees are. Guess what? Yeah, so
I'm
go
here
ahead.
To tell you.
Well,
I'm
just going to say that I know Street Grace has had the same exact problems, is that mm-hmm. in my community, trafficking doesn't happen here. And I'm sure Kathy has seen the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constant battle to bring that awareness.
It's denial.
And
sure.
you're going to mm-hmm. do it with, again, success stories. You're going to do it with some staggering statistics that you have that
yeah.
are true and that are valid, and you're not going to just stop trying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good point, is you show up every day mm-hmm. saying the same thing in the same tone, in the same way, with backed up statistics. I mean, data is important. Make sure that you can cite everything you state. And I think that's it. It's not going to change overnight. We're trying to change societal thinking mm-hmm. on both of these issues. And frankly, you know, domestic violence is 50 years in the fight and still working, and I think that's going to continue. When we first started talking about DMST, domestic minor sex trafficking, we're talking about sex with children for money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, and now we have some momentum, but it isn't because it happened overnight. It's because we showed up anywhere we were invited to talk, and we told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
I will go back to your point about saying, I'm not going to invite you in to tell you, so you can tell us how bad we are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that.
Right.
We say,
mm-hmm.
this is happening. This happens here. We don't point any fingers. We say this. And honestly, you know, we're a faith-based organization. We pray for the victims. We pray for those that serve them. And we pray for the perpetrators. All are lost. All have a right to go home someday. And so mm-hmm. we pray for all of them. What we say is that this activity is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That and we give the statistics, and we also always make sure that there's a solution, that there's something on the other side. If we're going to say that there's
right.
a problem, we don't just leave them with that problem. We leave them with, there are ways to change this, raising awareness, raising support.
Right. And if I could just say something, jump in and say something, because if there is a man or a woman listening right now that you had brought up a good point, if they're feeling bad about themselves, if they're struggling with what they've walked through, there are lots of places that you can find help in your own local community to feel good about yourself. I know that there's a lot of women's support groups, whether it's for domestic violence or through our churches, about just knowing who you are as a person. Because ultimately, you know, God has made each one of us beautifully and wonderfully. And that is true of men and women. And so I think ultimately the best healer for any of us is finding out who we are. There's great counseling agencies in all of our areas across the United States. And find a good counselor. And, you know, we are all responsible for ourselves, so take care of you and do what you need to do to take care of you.
Yeah. One of the things that our community has is a collaborative where all of our organizations come together. So what we're hoping is that we can feed on each other for the need of the community so that we can get the word out. Collaboratively, here are some organizations that can help you. If you need a GED, if you need a place to stay, if you need some food, these are the organizations that you can go to. I think that's part of the effort is I'm not necessarily we need a village kind of person. I'll just be real honest with you. But I am a community person, and as more of our community efforts work together, we're going to be able to solve not only domestic violence and human trafficking or hungry people, but together we can identify more people and fit them in the right place.
That's beautiful. I like that. And also making people feel comfortable to be able to come forward in a safe place to tell them, hey, you know, man, I got a problem and I need some help. And that's very, very important. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, if I could just jump in there, because if there is someone listening, I think that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks is it's really hard to raise our hand and say, I need help. And I'm found myself in a situation I never expected to be in. But, you know, we've all been there. You know, life can be hard no matter what your social economic status is. You know, don't be afraid to ask for help because there's people out there that are willing to help.
Think that's both sides of the issue. Perpetrators, you know, they need, you know, they are unwilling to ask for help. It's very rare that one of the perpetrators of domestic violence or sex trafficking doesn't understand they're doing something wrong.
It's very rare they don't realize it.
That they don't realize they're doing something wrong. Yeah. I mean, there is some understanding even at some point, even if their denial is, you know, huge, there is some point where they understand that they're doing something wrong, but they certainly don't have many safe places to go. So to create that and men supporting men and teaching the next generation of men and those sort of things. But I think it's true for both sides.
Right.
Asking for help, whichever side you're on, is very difficult.
Collaborative effort. You mentioned collaboration. Are you prepared to tell us what some of the agencies you work with at Collaborate? Just if you don't have to. No.
A few of the agencies are. We have one group that helps people get their GEDs.
Okay.
We have a lot of the already established government organizations, the Department of Labor, who is just very helpful to us because they help our women with career writing resumes, career objectives. The goodwill is huge in our community, and we also actually use that in our center to send the women to some other career career classes and such. The other thing is, speaking from what Cheryl said, there's a group called Arise, which is a counseling group for drug abuse, alcohol abuse, but we also want to move into anger and anger management and family anger. And for me, for someone to step up and want to work with the perpetrator or with the person that has the anger is going to help solve the problem. I know I've worked with Street Grace, and one of the things that I see, and I've heard Cheryl say over and over again, we've got to stop the demand. We've got to stop the cycle within domestic violence. We cannot do that just by protecting the women and having, we need that. We need a safe place for that woman and those children to go, but we also need to step up and make sure we break that cycle within the men or the women who are causing the violence.
Very good. Very good.
There is an organization called Men Stopping Violence.
I was just going to say that.
That is specifically for that. Mm-hmm. And it's a great organization, been around for many years.
It is.
And I would certainly, I don't have their data here with me, but Men Stopping Violence
is a national organization.
Wonderful organization.
Right. And it is, it's a national organization. I think probably the biggest thing, Jack, is for anyone who's listening is don't give up hope. Because there is help. And I think don't give up hope if you're the person struggling with anger, if you're in the midst of the situation of domestic violence, or if you are the victim. There is one other program I'd like to mention that's a national program, and it's a safe haven for kids. So if you are a child that happens to hear this, or a parent that you can tell this to your child, if you're at a time that you're at home and something's happening and you want to get away, find the big yellow sign. They're often at Quick Trips and Churro. You may know more.
I think most fire stations in the state of Georgia are safe havens for children.
It says safe haven. Yeah. What does it say?
It's a big yellow sign. It's just a big yellow sign, and when a kid goes there, they are teaching about it in the schools.
Yeah.
So if you need to get away and escape from your family home, if there is, you know, an argument going on and you don't feel safe or you just need to escape it, go find a place that has the big yellow sign. I think it is a fire station, and I also know there are Quick Trips.
Yeah,
we'll get the information and everything like that.
Yeah, we'll get that for our listeners, and we'll get it on the website. Also, and I'll tell you, when I was a police officer, I've helped kids run away from home. I have. I've seen them walking down the street, and I say, "What's going on?" And they say, "Well, Mom and Dad are having a fight. I don't want to be home." I said, "Okay, get in the back of the car, and we'll take them to a safe place." You know, all right, sure. You know, and then we'll feed them and stuff, and then we will go to a very quiet place and called CPS, and we call it CPS, Child Protective Services, and somebody comes over, unmarked cars, and and plain clothes. Mm-hmm. Picks the child up, gets into a safe place, and it'll happen very quickly.
Well, you know, and you talk about the runaways, and because that's one of the things that we are very clear is a huge risk factor for
Absolutely.
Domestic minor sex trafficking, yeah. Children who run away.
Yeah.
Children run away for a reason. So this all plays together. I mean, if they're in a home with domestic violence, that raises the likelihood that this child is going to run away. Running away raises the likelihood that they will be involved in domestic minor sex trafficking because a perpetrator knows how to spot those children. And these are children who are used to abuse. So again, you know, this all ties together.
Yeah.
Right. And if I could jump right in and say something else.
Go ahead, please.
You know, there's a couple of things that come to my mind as we're talking. Yes, it all plays together. You know, I see a lot of families that don't go to shelters, but they come to us because they're in trouble. And a lot of times it is because of domestic violence. So, you know, the families have split up and now they're really struggling with money, or they're still in the midst of struggling and family issues are hard. They can't pay their rent, or, you know, they're separated. There's all those kind of things that happen. So what we try to do is to help create some stability in the home. Mm-hmm. So if there is somebody out there that's saying, well, what can I do? Is there something I could do just to help? You know, get involved in some of your local agencies that maybe help provide food for families who are struggling. Maybe help with single parent homes, or, you know, just some of those agencies that are really trying to help promote healthy family living, because it's all about helping each other and being preventive for some of this. And I think the other thing that people don't understand is that there's a statistic that I've recently read that 50% of all homelessness is a cause of domestic violence. So, you know, and homelessness doesn't have to last forever, but it can last for a period of time, but a lot of times people are escaping because of that. So if you can get involved to keep people stable, that's just a huge thing that we can all do to help families that are struggling.
Right.
And, you know, just big picture implications on our economy. Mm-hmm. There's approximately $3 to $5 billion that is lost every year because of absenteeism from the workplace. That people don't show up at work because they've been struggling with some issue that's dealing with domestic violence.
Yep.
You know, something that happened with their kid or happened with them. Or, I mean, I think what we don't understand is how widespread it is. And I guess that's heartbreaking to me.
It is, yeah. It's it tugs at my heart because I know it personally and professionally. And I know there's a word out there, people call it codependency. People throw that out there, and it's when codependency, in my terms, my definition, my paraphrasing, is that is when I have to change my behaviors because of somebody else, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to protect them or cover up their behavior to either protect my family, protect my facade that I'm providing in the community. And in order to do that, I'm going to change who I am, change my behavior to protect either a alcoholic or abusive spouse. Mm. Okay, and folks don't want to bring that to the fore. They don't want to bring it up. Yeah.
And you know when you said your corporate person didn't have any problems, and as Cheryl said, we don't point fingers. And because it's not anything that can be pointed at. But economically, as Kathy said, I've got a couple other statistics. Domestic violence victims lose 8 million days of paid work per day in the U.S. alone, and that's equivalent of 32,000 full-time jobs. In addition, the cost of inmate partner violence in the U.S. exceeds $5.8 billion per year. $4.1 billion are for direct medical and health care services. So one of the things when I've worked with Street Grace is the economic issue of taking care and eliminating domestic minor sex trafficking. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's the same thing if you're an economist, if you think on that side of your brain.
Sure, the bottom line,
it's crucial that we begin to change the culture, change the way people look at domestic violence.
And how about hiring somebody or bringing somebody into an organization, you know, our Fortune 1,500 and Fortune 75 companies. And I, Cheryl, I'm with you on this, is you don't go in there and with a baseball bat hit upside the head.
You may want to, but you shouldn't.
No, you want to, yeah. It's walking into a group or an organization and just simply presenting, bringing awareness, stating the facts, hitting them at the bottom line, what's happening, and then if you need help, here's who we are, here's how you can get help, and do it quietly to save somebody's life or save a child's life. Am I on track with, you know, because I'll get fired up on this, and I'll go toe-to-toe with somebody if I know they're hurting another human being like that, just how I'm wired. But I also realize
the
importance.
Yeah, but is that for the greater good in that type of
situation? Exactly, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you how I think how successful that approach is that currently I lead a task force in the governor's office for children and families, and our task force is charged with educating adults in the state of Georgia on domestic minor sex trafficking. And last year we established a designation, which was Champions for Safe Children. And the requirement of that designation was that a corporation would change their human resources policies to say that no funding or corporate time would go toward any adult entertainment, that they would allow a one-hour training in their facility, and that they would post the 800 numbers in order to report trafficking. And the thing is they said, you'll never get a corporation to do it. And yes, we have. And we go in there and
That's
we talk
so
about
cool.
domestic minor sex trafficking in businesses. We've been at law firms. We've been at general corporations. We've been at another nonprofit, a part of the diocese of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But I think it's in the way we present it. We say, these are the facts. Frankly, if the facts alone don't move you to action or taking or doing something, then there's nothing else we could say anyway. Those in the room who recognize that they need to take personal action will know already. There's no need for the additional push. And we are able to talk to a lot more people and get a lot more people involved.
Gotcha. Yeah. I like that. I like that. That's great. One of the toughest questions I asked a client one time, and that's a victim of domestic violence, is because they shared with me, they said, I've just lost who I am. And that just tugs at your heart. And so I asked this person, I said, well, tell me, let's just try and visit this again. Who are you? And it was a tough question for that person. And there were a lot of tears, and there was a lot of angst, a lot of anxiety, and a lot of coaching and counseling, but that person eventually did find who they were again. that they had lost themselves because of domestic violence. What I find in my work is that women at some point will have, that are victims of domestic violence, will lose themselves in that whole thing, raising the kids, taking care of family issues, taking, you know, make sure everything's all squared away and at home, and then the, here comes the angry dad home, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose, and if, you know, and they have a tendency to lose themselves over a period of time. I would like to say that you can find yourself again.
You can.
You can find yourself again, and what Kathy was saying, there is hope. It's hope. The underlying phrase here is there is hope to get yourself out of that position. And I'd like to say to anybody that's listening right now, a child, a male or a female, adult, if we've hit a nerve with you, or something, you got an aha moment, or something just didn't feel right when you're listening to us talk, just ask yourself, what was that? And if you realize that you may be in a codependent or maybe a victimized relationship, just, you know, pick up the phone, give us an email, give us a call, and get some help, because there is hope, and you know, we love you all, heck, mm-hmm. you know. And so anything else? We got plenty of time now. I'm just going to roll.
Well, yeah. I just want to say that you actually feel as if you are a different person,
yeah.
that you even inside, like, you perhaps have a job outside the home.
Yeah.
You're one person outside that home. Inside that home, you're not. One of the things that I want, and you build yourself up to become a new and a better person,
mm-hmm.
if you have the courage, if you have folks around you that will lay their hands on you and that will love you and know that there's hope. One of the things that I want to do within just my small community welcome house is to have peers that come in, women who have the courage to say, I've been through domestic violence.
Okay.
And then to share with those women who are in the midst of it now, to know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's not going to be today. It's not going to be tomorrow. And it's going to take a little work.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a little faith, and it's going to take a little hope. But if they hear that from actual women or men,
mm-hmm.
who have been victims themselves, what a difference it would make. And so if I can say anything to the audience, it is, have the courage. If you've been through this and you have made a difference, get involved in your community. Give back to what you were given,
mm-hmm.
because someone,
very well put,
through the grace of God, has given you a second chance and a life to live very, very differently.
Absolutely.
That's great. I like
mm-hmm.
that. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
If you are a friend of somebody that you know that's being victimized at home through domestic violence, what suggestions, ladies, would you offer to them to connect with them and say, you know, Susie, I think there's a problem. What tools would you give our listeners on how to connect with somebody?
On a personal basis, I would not judge at all. You're not going to change that person's mind. That person has to change their own mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You love them. Mm-hmm. You walk with them. You're there for them. You give them an opportunity to perhaps grow by saying, why don't you come with me to our women's group? We're doing a message on self-esteem or something like that. So you be their friend. You're there for them. In no way do you criticize either partner, and you just make sure that they know that you're there if they need you in any given circumstance.
Okay.
I think along with that, I think providing opportunities for them for education, if there's because what happens often when they're in the midst of a situation of domestic violence, you're afraid to read anything. You're afraid that, because you don't want to upset your partner. So all those things, you stay hidden. And so I think providing that safe place for education, come to my house, is there something you want to read? Is there, you know, providing those opportunities for that to happen is another gift that you can give someone who's in the middle of that. And again, just as Teresa said, and I said earlier, love them where they're at and don't judge them. And because ultimately they have to make that decision. because no matter where they're at on that journey, it takes time to figure out what you're going to do. So, and there's a lot of things that are at play in our lives. So, again, it's just being there for someone.
I like that. As we get close to the top of the hour, how much time we got? We got 6 minutes. Cheryl, I'll go with you first. If you would just tell us once again who you are and how do we get a hold of you, and if somebody needs some assistance in DMST or somebody wants to bring somebody from DMST from Street Grace into the organization, how would they go about doing that?
Well, I'm Cheryl DeLuca Johnson. I'm the president and CEO of Street Grace. Our website is streetgrace.org. If you know of or are a victim of domestic minor sex trafficking, and I do not have the number in front of me, but I'm sure we'll get it up on the website.
We'll get it on the website.
Mm-hmm. Georgia Cares. It's the statewide response in the state of Georgia. There's also the Polaris group, which is the national 800 number for those who are listening outside the state of Georgia. And both of those facilities will help you identify the next steps. You know, assessment centers, law enforcement, social services, all of those things. We understand that most children aren't going to report themselves. So it's going to be the adults in their lives who have witnessed it who are going to do that. If you'd like us to come to your corporation in the state of Georgia, please contact us at streetgrace.org. Go ahead and email us, and we'll come to your corporation. We'd love to designate you as a champion for safe children in the state of Georgia.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Kathy.
Okay. I am Kathy Bergren from the Real Life Center. You can contact me at rlc@reallifecenter.org. My contact information is also on the website here with Jack. But if you are someone that is interested in just how do I get involved in my community, what kind of things can I do, or as a church, what can we do to help with victims of domestic violence, I would be glad to talk with you. If you are someone who is just trying to figure out how to make it on your own, you're also welcome to contact me. I'd love to be able to be that resource for you. Again, email is probably the best way.
Okay, that's great, great. Teresa, please.
I'm Teresa Wash. I'm with Community Welcome House in Coweta County, and I would just urge anyone, if they feel like their life is threatened or if they want a place, they can call. There's a national domestic hotline, which is 1-800-799-7233. But I'm going to give you my phone number, the Community Welcome House's phone number also, because anyone within the Atlanta area, we can help them on our crisis line find the place that they need to go. And I just don't want anyone not to have some place to go. And that number is 770-304-0966. And my website is communitywelcomehouse.org.
Okay, that's communitywelcomehouse.org. And the number again is
770-304-0966. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
And anyone that would like to speak to me about anything concerning domestic violence, whether it's someone who wants to get involved, we always, always, always need volunteers. Or someone who needs the help, they can go to the www.communitywelcomehouse.org, and I will get their information.
That's beautiful. Thank you. As we get close to the top of the hour here, we got 2 minutes. I'd like to let everybody know that you can get a hold of me at www.sourcepointcoaching.com. That's sourcepointcoaching.com, and also on Legacy Leader Radio. And I also would like to make an announcement that I'm looking at around mid-July that my book will be coming out. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, Jack.
And I went to the publisher, and it's called The Other Side of Anger, A Son's Search for Peace. And those of you who have been watching my Facebook page and leaving your comments, those crazy selfie pictures up there were a test to see which ones would be on the cover. So
make the cover.
So we've chosen the cover picture, and that will be coming out in mid-July. And I'd like to thank John Thatcher for that, and he's listening right now. Now he's going, Jack, you'd mentioned my name. You shouldn't do that. But anyway, for all that help, and the book will be coming out in July. But not taking away from the importance of the subject of our radio call today, of our show, is domestic violence. Ladies and gentlemen, it's some bad stuff. We got to get a handle on it. We got to get our minds wrapped around it. We can't hide behind it anymore. We got to get a handle on anger, both within men and with women, and seeing and understanding the effect that it has on us personally, professionally, and in the world around us. And ladies and gentlemen, with that said, I'd like to say thank you to my wonderful, wonderful hostess, Krista.
Oh, now he's making up for it.
Sure he's trying.
Because, ladies and gentlemen, I am in trouble. And I'd also like to thank Kathy, Cheryl, and Teresa for being such wonderful guests and putting up with me and bugging you guys to come in the show today.
Yeah, you're brave. You got a studio full of women today. Yes. Look out.
Help me. Help me. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say thank you very much for listening in. Hello, Mom. I love you, and I'll talk to you later on today. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, we are out of here.